I mean, typically this is known as the feeding of the 5,000, but it's obvious from the text that there were women and children, right? So we should no longer call this the feeding of the 5,000. This is the feeding of the more than the 5,000. And it reflects the paradigms of the time, right, that prioritized the men, and the women and the children were kind of an afterthought. And we have to wrestle with these texts, right? We have two great texts. There's the Old Testament text, which I could preach a whole sermon on, and I won't, because I felt called to preach on the feeding of the 5,000 text. But both are about the role of discipleship. Both are about what does it mean to step into this journey of faith and be part of this adventure that we're on together. What I was struck by this week as I was reading these texts is that today's reading actually follows a birthday party that Herod had. And Jesus hears about it, right? That part didn't get into the lectionary text, but the verse does begin when Jesus heard about it. And so Herod, I mean, what happens is Herod has a birthday party. Herod is the king of Israel at the time, the appointed leader by the Romans. And so he's having his birthday party. And that means that the political elite, the economic elite, the rich, the powerful, the famous, were all going to be at Herod's birthday party. And there was a banquet. People are eating, right? There's an abundance of food. There's really good wine. Everybody's eating. That's the context for the feeding of all these people who are suffering. The rich and the powerful are having their party, and they're gathering. And at one point, Herod's daughter gets up and dances, and she is so amazing, and he is so moved by what happens that he offers her whatever she wants, up to half of his kingdom. And she's young, and she doesn't know what to ask, and so she asks for her mother, and her mother, who is angry at John the Baptist for him speaking truth, asks for John's head on a platter. And so that's what this young girl has to ask for the beauty of her dance, right? That's what she gets in return, is the head of a dead man on a platter, right? I mean, it says something about the nature of the world. It says something about the nature of this place where the rich and powerful are gathered, and that's what happens. John the Baptist is beheaded, and his head is brought into this dinner party on a platter. That's an awful scene. I mean, it's egregious, right? And you have to imagine the experience of the guests, and the ancient world was a violent place. I'm sure this was not the first time things like this had happened, and yet still word gets out and people talk and it has an impression that, and John's disciples were there, and so John's disciples tell Jesus. That's what happens in the verses just before today's. Now, John was a mentor for Jesus. John was Jesus's cousin, actually. They grew up together, and he's older, and it is apparent he's something of a mentor and a friend and a collaborator. And so when Jesus hears not only of his death, but of the violent nature of his death, I've got to imagine that he felt grief. I've got to imagine that he was just troubled for the nature of the world, for the nature of the political system that he was a part of, and for how awful things were. And he wanted to go by himself into the wilderness for some solitude, and again, I imagine, just to grieve and to give voice to his anguish. And so that's what the text begins. When he heard it, he goes off to be by himself. And then the text says, when the crowds heard it, when they hear of what's happened, when they hear of what the rich and the powerful have been up to at this banquet, they seek Jesus out. And somehow they get word that he's going over to this place, and they go to this beach, and when Jesus shows up, there they are on the beach. Like he's set out to be by himself, and he shows up, and there's a crowd of people there. And he doesn't get to be by himself. But the text says is that Jesus had compassion on them. And the word in the Greek for compassion here means that this is a gut-wrenching compassion. Like this isn't just Jesus is feeling nice towards these people. Jesus is somehow, he is just feeling it in his very parasympathetic nervous system. Like he's got it going on there. And so he begins healing them. I mean, he's aware of their suffering. He's aware of their need in that moment. And their response to how broken their world is. And so he heals. He begins healing and giving words of comfort. And that's what he does that day. That's how he spends his day. And the people keep coming and coming, and there are women and children and men until there is this crowd of thousands. This is when we hear about the disciples. Right? This is when the disciples of Jesus are the ones that show up. And I think they are pragmatic, at least in ways that I think I would be very pragmatic. I get what they're saying. They're realizing, hey, we're off in a deserted place. We're somehow responsible for this gathering. And these people are going to get hungry, right? And then they're going to get hangry. And, you know, we better do something here about this. And so I think they're very well-meaning, and they say to Jesus, hey, send these people away. This is a deserted place. There's no food out here. Send them someplace where they can buy themselves food. Send them somewhere where they can take care of themselves, right? And Jesus says, we don't have to send them away. You feed them. This is not a good story if you're a disciple of Jesus, right? Because I imagine if you're a disciple of Jesus and you're being told, oh no, actually this is your responsibility. I want you to do it. My response is, can't do that. What? Do you know how many years worth of wages it would take to feed all these people? Right? Do you have any sense, Jesus, of what it would take to feed all these people? Like, seriously. And Jesus is like, no, you do it. And they're like, all we've got is 5 loaves and 2 fish. If you think about it, 5 loaves and 2 fish is probably just enough for them all to have dinner. That's their dinner, basically, right? In the book of John, there's a small boy, but not in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. This is their dinner, 5 loaves and 2 fish. And Jesus is saying, take what is yours and feed them. And he says, okay, I don't, if I was in their shoes, I would be just totally baffled. I would feel the weight of it, the enormity of it. I would have a deep sense of my own inadequacy in that moment and how little I have to give, it feels like. But Jesus says, give me what you got. And so I give him the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and he blesses the loaves. And then he breaks the loaves. And now what was 5 is now 10. And I imagine he hands 10 disciples loaves, and then there's 2 fish, and he adds the other 2 disciples, the 2 fish. And he says, go and feed them. And there's that moment where they're standing there with half a loaf looking out into this crowd of people that I think is the most, I mean, that's the real tension point in this story. And so they take a little piece of the loaf and they just start handing it out, right? And I don't know what the faces are that they're looking. They're looking at other people in the eye as they're doing this. And I'm sure there's a mix of expressions. Like some people are like, well, that's not very much. Well, that's not going to feed me, right? I'm sure there's others that are like, recognize they get the enormity of what's happening here. And they're like, hey, you know what? This will help. And this isn't going to fill my stomach, but gosh, It'll take the edge off. I imagine there are smiles and the reception of gratitude as each little piece is doled out. And the disciples go throughout the crowd and they just keep giving what they've got with their own sense of insecurity, with their own sense of inadequacy, and they just go ahead and they give. And as they give, I imagine something happens and works within them, and that there is some sort of transformation in them, because I think they get a little bit more bold in the giving, and the pieces that used to be so small are now getting larger as they keep giving these gifts, as they keep passing it out. And as the pieces get larger and the gratitude that happens and just their experience of the reception of what's happening there, like, there's a transformation that happens just in their lives and the world around them. And pretty soon you have thousands and thousands of people who have been fed. And not only are they just morsels, they're satisfied. There's enough, right? And there's this abundance of food. And I don't know what's happening for the disciples, but by the end of it, Jesus is like, hey, I've got 12 baskets here, one for each of you. Go, and you fill these baskets. Right? And you have this experience of what used to be so small in your own sense of inadequacy and insufficiency. And then you go forward and, wow, there's a lot of bread here. What didn't feel like enough is actually more than enough. What felt insufficient is actually more than we need. It's not what's being given. It's the posture with which it's given, right? It's the attitude. It's how you step into that space. That's what it is. It's about how do you step into that space of being called to do what seems impossible, being called to do that seems to be greater than something you could ever do. I think most of us would just kind of run and hide and say, no, I can't. That's foolish. It's not going to work. But that's not the story. The story is, no, go ahead. And Jesus blesses it. And you'll be fed. And it'll be enough, right? This is a metaphor for discipleship. It's a metaphor for the life of following in Jesus. And there's a clear connection here between the Eucharist. Jesus blesses the bread and he breaks it. You know, in the book of John, when this story is told, this is John's Eucharistic theology, happens at the feeding of the 5,000. And if you think about it, that's what happens when we go to this table and there will be a loaf of bread for everybody in this room. As if that loaf of bread is going to feed us. And then we will do this really ridiculous thing where I will hand you a morsel of that bread. And you will put your hands out and hope that somehow that will feed you. And you will have a sip of wine and that hope that somehow that will satisfy you. And we do it Sunday after Sunday if we keep coming back. And we don't go away feeling like, oh, that wasn't enough. Or he really was stingy with the bread today. Or maybe he gave me a little bit too much bread today. He keeps giving me crusts. I really wish I could have this soft part. Why does he keep giving me crusts? And yet somehow it happens, right? Somehow we're fed and we go out and we live our lives. I mean, that's the nature of this thing we're involved in, that at some level it doesn't make sense. And at another level, it is deeply true. Or there's something deeply powerful there. That's the journey we're being invited into here. If I was going to preach that sermon on Jacob and wrestling, you know, there is something there too about expecting blessing. Part of the heart of that Jacob story is that Jacob is hoping for blessing. He has to steal blessing from his brother early in his life. He has to wrestle for what's his with his uncle Laban. Like, this is just a man who is struggling against the world, and then he's afraid that his brother Esau is going to come and get him and kill him because his brother's so mad. And so he spends a night wrestling with his demons, wrestling with his psyche, wrestling with God. And he persists, and at the end, you know, the thing that he's wrestling with says, "What is your name?" And he says, "My name is Jacob." And whatever he's wrestling with says, "Now on, your name is not Jacob, it will be Israel." And what Israel means is the one who wrestles with God. I mean, the people of faith, this journey of faith, it's ultimately, we're people who wrestle with God. We're people who wrestle with the divine, and we hope for blessing. And we get blessing. But in this story, the whatever he's wrestling with touches his hip and injures his hip. And so Jacob leaves the encounter limping. You don't fall into the hands, right? You don't fall into the hands of a loving, powerful God without being affected. So this is Jans Richardson's poem on that. Jacob's blessing. If this blessing were easy, anyone would claim it. As it is, I'm here to tell you that it will take some work. This is the blessing that visits you in the struggling, in the wrestling, in the striving. This is the blessing that comes after you have left everything behind. After you've stepped out, after you've crossed into that realm beyond every landmark you have known, this is the blessing that takes all night to find. It's not that this blessing is so difficult, as if it were not filled with grace or with the love that lives in every line. It's simply that it requires you to want it, to ask for it, to place yourself in its path. It demands that you stand to meet it when it arrives, that you stretch yourself in ways you didn't know you could move, that you agree not to give up. So when this blessing comes, born in the hands of the difficult angel who has chosen you, do not let go. Give yourself into its grip. It will wound you. But I tell you, there will come a day when what felt to you like limping was something more like dancing as you moved into the cadence of your new and blessed name. Amen.